Tonight, it's Creature Night now on Coast to Coast AM. For a couple hours, we're going to be talking about Bigfoot. As a matter of fact, we're going to the heart of Bigfoot country in Willow Creek, California. That's where the name Bigfoot became a household word back in 1958. Then at the end of the show, we talk about the beast of Boggy Creek. Get ready. That's all next on Coast to Coast AM. And let me tell you a little bit about Stephen Stroyford, proprietor of a bookshop in Willow Creek, California. Now, that is the heart of the historic Bigfoot country, Willow Creek. It's the same area where the Bigfoot name became a household word in 1958 after giant tracks were found in a cast just north of town up in Bluff Creek. It's the same area where the famous 1967 Patterson-Gimlin film of Bigfoot was filmed. Stephen blogs. You can find that link at coasttocoastam.com. Here he is tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Stephen, welcome. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
How's it feel to live out there in Bigfoot Capital?
Well, it's a never-ending story. You know, every day there's some new Bigfoot story and someone calling me, someone coming in here on their pilgrimage to the Mecca or Jerusalem of Bigfooting.
Has anybody ever been hurt out there because of Bigfoot?
There are stories like that. People going missing. There was one that was a well-known hoax, but you know, nothing too documented that I would call to mind immediately. People go missing all the time. You know, we find skeletons in creek beds here, but you know, that's most likely due to the other thing we're famous for out here in Humboldt County, the marijuana growing industry. The big
yes, it is. I wonder if Bigfoot's out there for that, huh?
Well, you know, there's a lot of growers out here. It's considered a legal thing for the so-called medicinal purposes.
Medicinal, yeah.
But I've asked the growers, and most of them don't have a story to tell you. You would think that if Bigfoot is the wise creature of the woods, he might be using these herbs for himself, but I've never heard a story, and that may be because they just want to keep their spot secret.
How big is Willow Creek, Stephen?
Well, it's a tiny little hamlet, really. We have about four blocks downtown. And then about a mile and a half east of town, there's a couple of little outposts, like my bookstore, Bigfoot Books. And
okay.
The place where they serve the Bigfoot Burger, right next to me. And down there in that town, you can see on my my YouTube page, which is linked up on my blog if you go there, you'll see my little walking tour I did from the four blocks or so of downtown, where you can see Bigfoot history and Bigfoot iconography on every street corner, and almost every other shop has something, a Bigfoot statue, or we have the Bigfoot Museum here, which is quite well regarded.
It's like Roswell in the UFO case.
Oh, yeah.
Same kind of thing. How did you get interested in the Bigfoot story?
I'm the usual kid from the 70s, you know. Growing up, came out to California, and the first thing I knew, I was seeing the Patterson film in the drive-in on the big screen.
Sure.
back when they still had drive-ins. And, you know, I was reading all the paranormal books out of the library, pretty much read everything on Bigfoot that I could find in there when I was, 10 years old. But took quite a while before I got back interested in it. You know, I was living up here in Willow Creek in the early 90s, Humboldt County, going to school, and just came out here to Willow Creek basically because we were going to have a kid, and this is a place where it's sunny and natural, and down there on the coast in the Redwood Zone, it's foggy and dreary quite a lot of the time. So I moved up here for other reasons than Bigfoot. But, you know, that was in 2001. I've been here, you know, over 10 years now.
Now, in the 10 years you've been there, Stephen, have you seen anything?
Yeah, well, you know, before I came up here, I thought Bigfoot was just kind of a humorous thing. We had a little church of Bigfoot called the Church of Bigfoot Scientists, and my friends and I would have campfires and joke around about it. But one time we were hiking back up in the hill in the Redwoods, and we got to the top of the hill there, and the dogs started acting funny, you know, and when your dogs are, you know, mountain dogs, and then, you know, what they bark at has a very distinct quality to it.
Sure.
You know, if they see a bear, Well, these things were barking in a way that I'd never heard them bark before. We then heard a crack in the brush and looked down the hill in this thick second growth forest, and you know, all I saw was a brown thing moving in the brush, and then it disappeared. You know, I saw a head, which seemed rather tall. That was about it. And I've had other things happen since then, you know, but I can't say that they were definitively Bigfoot encounters.
But it made you a believer?
Up in the hill.
You became a believer after that?
I'm sorry, what?
You became a believer after that?
Well, the kind of person I am, I don't like to talk about belief, you know. For me, it's something that I'm investigating. It's become an increasingly curious thing as I sit here in this store, and I'm constantly exposed to witness stories, you know. Everyday people who come in here and tell me, well, you know, I saw one of those things. And, you know, when you can look them in the eye and see that they're ordinary, normal people, you see that they're not pulling your leg.
No, of course, yeah. Now, your bookstore, is it got just Bigfoot books in there or just about everything?
Oh, no, no. Before this, I was in the world of antiquarian books, and it's sort of what drew me as a career path. But I do specialize in Bigfoot books. There's about 100 titles in here, and that's the best of them. You know, there's hundreds of books out there, but there are many of them that are very small, private press type of publications. They're hard to find. Many very rare books in Bigfoot.
You know, Stephen, the Bigfoot community is pretty different. You know, the older guys who were researchers years ago, you know, many of them are fading out of this. Some of the younger guys who are in, it seems to be a very egotistical pushed endeavor now. You know, loaded with some, you know, people who are, you know, fraudulent. You know, we've had these stories. You've heard of them, of course. And, you know, you've got a lot of that. You've got a lot of competition. It doesn't seem to be teamwork out there. That's my perception. Am I right or wrong?
Well, it depends whom you're hanging with, you know. My friends, they're a good bunch of people. They've all since become independent researchers. I guess it used to be they were all in the BFRO.
Right.
But, you know, this goes back to the first generation, the Bigfoot Wars theme, you know, all those guys known as the Four Horsemen of Sasquatchery or Bigfootery, guys like Grover Krantz and John Green and Renee the Hinden. Those fellows all squabbled with each other. And they split off on various points of disagreement. And that's continued to this day.
Sure.
But even more now, it's a quest for glory and a quest for fame. You know, we get seemingly closer and closer to this thing every day, and yet it seems farther and farther away. But, you know, with the DNA project that's been going on now, we all sort of hope for the best. But, you know, everyone wants to keep their secrets, and it's very competitive. And, you know, it's split down the middle between the people who believe in the paranormal Bigfoot stuff, and they approach it almost in a spiritual way, and the hardcore physical scientists who want to see this as an animal, on and on and on it goes. You know, ape or human, and the arguments never end. And there's a new controversy seemingly every day when you get involved in this thing.
Give us an update, Stephen, on this Bigfoot DNA project.
Yeah, well, I suspect I'm one of the few people who's not under some kind of non-disclosure agreement.
Or a gag order or something like that.
But at the same time, I don't want to go revealing all the rumors. I mean, they're out there. There's just an endless supply of rumors. When this paper is going to be released and what the DNA is telling us. Some of these leaks, they seem rather convincing. If you Google up the Robert Lindsay blog, for instance, you'll get a lot of that. Bigfoot apparently has a fully human mitochondrial DNA, but a non-human nuclear DNA. And we just heard, you know, that a few days ago. We just heard this was going to be released in 2 weeks, and then on the DNA technician's website. Melba Ketchum is her name, out of Texas.
She's doing it?
She's the head of the lab. She's a veterinary doctor, but she now has a full scientific team working on this. They've submitted a formal scientific paper to a proper academic level peer-reviewed journal. And now apparently it's past peer review. So
whatever it is.
Whether it will prove that Bigfoot is existing. We've had decades of earlier DNA studies which have said things like it's an unknown primate.
Right. Well, Stephen, where was the sample found and what was the sample?
Well, there are various rumors about that too, but there are some well-known samples. There are anywhere between 100 and 200 samples, depending on whom you're listening to. But, you know, one quite notable one supposedly came from a couple of Sasquatch that were shot here in central Sierra Nevada back in the end of 2010.
Well, is she doing DNA on a lot of different samples then?
Yes.
Or of just one creature, samples from mm-hmm. one creature?
No, this is actually a rare case of collaboration among Sasquatch Bigfoot people.
Okay. So what, everybody brought their samples in at the same time and just said, DNA all this stuff?
Yeah. Well, it's been going on for a couple of years. You had Melba Ketchum and David Politis on your show
right.
a few years back. And that was the announcement that drew in a lot of these samples.
This is the same thing? You mean they still...
Yes, it's still going on. The agony of it never ceases. But, you know...
Wow.
Yes, they got samples from all across the country.
I thought that came and went and faded away, so that they really haven't even announced anything yet.
Not formally. They're responsible for a lot of leaks, and a lot of people involved in this are leaking information. And a lot of people are angry, and there's lawsuit threats flying around.
Okay. So, but some of these samples, Stephen, could be animal, could be from a bear, could be from, you know, a mountain lion, who knows what, mixed in, I guess, with what may be a Bigfoot sample. Who knows, right?
Sure. Well, they've already gotten to that, past that point. You know, these samples have a methodology for eliminating known animals. You know, that's rather easy. That's the first primary thing you do is to compare it to various known animals. So what they have now are the ones that they feel confirmed positive for Sasquatch. And I don't know the exact number of these, but there are a good number of them. And there are also other DNA studies now that are starting up. I know of at least four groups that are doing their own projects, waiting for this one to come out and then hopefully to confirm or compare their results.
Well, if it's authenticated, it'll be a huge story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If.
If. It's a big if, because we don't have a body or a sample to compare it to.
No.
But as this one blogger, Robert Lindsay, has pointed out over and over again, you know, and many others, we don't need the body anymore. We don't want to go out killing an animal to prove it exists. But through DNA, we can tell how closely we're related to chimpanzees, you know, which is thought to be about 98% the same DNA.
Well, if this creature, Stephen, exists, and you know, I'm convinced people are seeing something. Like you say about people who come into your bookstore, you can tell if they're lying or not. I mean, generally. So people are seeing something. I don't know if it's an ape or who knows what it is, but they're seeing something. But why can't we get one? Why can't we find the remains of one? Where is the thing?
There are a lot of explanations for that, too. And one of them, of course, is the multidimensional alien theory, that they can disappear at will.
Yeah.
One case came up pretty recently, you know, this lady out of Oklahoma is saying they can go to that place where they go. And so she insists that they're a flesh and blood animal, but they're also capable of somehow leaving this world into another one. But I mean, more realistically, there are parsimonious explanations for these things. Like, this must be, if it exists, it's a creature that is very good at hiding from us. And it would have to be smart enough to understand what kind of creature we are to evade
sure.
us.
Yet some people say, I saw it lumbering across the road. You know, I saw it standing here throwing rocks at my cabin. I mean, so it's you know, it conflicts with a creature that would hide in a cave or you know, somewhere out in the woods, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, if you go back to the earliest accounts in the 1840s and such, you know, these were described as very rare things, very rare creatures. Like the reports out of BC, Canada, that came from J.W. Burns, who was an Indian agency employee with the Chehalis Indians outside of Vancouver. He had reports of them being very rare, but at one time common, according to the native First Nations people. So apparently, according to the native people around here, too, they were once much more open to people and interacting with them. In fact, there are stories of them even trading with humans, speaking a language that was very similar to Native American languages, even abducting humans, and in some cases mating with humans and producing offspring.
That could be pretty dramatic.
I don't know if this is too risque for Coast to Coast, but
well,
that's part of the lore.
Yeah.
You know? And so they're described as a very rare thing in those early stories, but as human habitation is spread out increasingly into the rural areas, we may you know, be living in more of the natural parts of the country than they did back in the day when it was purely natural. And you know, there's a big misconception that Bigfoot was something in the Pacific Northwest. You know, we have regional groups all across the country, you know, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, just everywhere, Arizona, and there are their own creature sightings there too.
Sure.
Like you're going to hear with Boggy Creek.
Well, and I remember when I was a kid, my first exposure to Bigfoot or Sasquatch really was the abominable snowman, the Yeti from the Himalayas. I mean, that's the story that captured me when I was a youngster. And then later on, years later, that's when I began to find out about Bigfoot and Sasquatch here in North America.
Sure. Well, you know, it did start in the 20s. It was mostly just considered one of those odd Indian tales, you know. Like their culture must all be purely legendary and superstitious, right? So these things couldn't have been real. But this J.W. Burns, he published articles in the paper there, and this Sasquatch idea, he took it seriously. And that kind of lurked in the background until Rene de Hinden came over here from Switzerland, and he saw the article about the abominable snowman. That was a very big thing in the 1951 when they found those Yeti tracks that you've seen, I'm sure.
That's right.
The big famous ones. And, you know, so this was the background. In the 50s, there was the abominable snowman craze. And Rene de Hinden said, you know, wouldn't that be something to find, go find one of those? And the fellow he was talking to said, well, you know, we have those right here. And he was up there in Canada, you know. So it wasn't too long before Rene de Hinden caught the bug, and that spread to John Green, one of the other early fellows, ran the paper there.
All right, well, hold on for a second, Stephen. We're going to take this quick break. We're going to come back in just a moment. We'll continue talking with you about Bigfoot and some related cases right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls on Bigfoot and questions also for Stephen Stroyfurt as we talk about, of course, Bigfoot Country, Willow Creek, California. And then the final hour, we're talking about the Beast of Boggy Creek, a separate interview with a very special person. So stand by for that as well. We'll be back. And we're with Stephen Stroyfurt. Stephen, wasn't it Raymond Wallace that apparently was the one who was part of those tracks that were found in 58, and that when he died, his son said that he had found large wooden feet, that he might have faked the whole thing? What's your take on all of that?
Yeah, well, my involvement with this gets kind of personal because my next-door neighbor used to work with Wallace and his brother.
Really? Okay.
Shorty Wallace. And in fact, he told me the other day that
He was a logger, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was a contractor working for logging, building roads.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is a frustrating story because there's so many people that came out and said, well, Bigfoot is dead. You know, this proves that it's false. But there were footprints found before Ray Wallace was even here. And, you know, there's a record of this going back centuries, thousands of years with the Native
sure.
people. But, you know, we had footprints found in the 40s. And we had a researcher up there. And after the war, he was... perhaps seeking some solitude, he would go up in the Bluff Creek area, and he actually interacted with them. He would leave out piles of food, and they would exchange gifts and so forth. But, you know, by the time the 50s came along, they found those footprints when they were cutting a new road up into the forest. You know, this was virgin timber, all old-growth Douglas fir forest back in there with some cedars and really beautiful country, still beautiful today, but of course a lot of it's been logged off. And this road, you know, seems to have stirred up the Sasquatches because the reports started coming out of there of this thing they were calling Bigfoot, you know, two words, Bigfoot. And they were cutting in this road and they would find, you know, their tents or their trucks were surrounded by these giant footprints when they come back in the morning to work. And Jerry Crew, who lived here locally, just east of here, working up there, he was the cat skinner. He would drive the Caterpillar tractor up, cutting, you know, the new road. And he would come back to his tractor in the morning and find it surrounded by these footprints. So he told the story, and it kind of got out. Some articles were published locally, but what really struck was when he contacted his friend Bob Titmus out of Anderson, which is near Reading, just over by I-5, and he came out here and they made plaster casts. So you've probably seen the photograph that was published on the front page of the Humboldt Times
right.
in October of him holding this giant footprint. Now, if you compare that to the Ray Wallace tracks, it's not at all the same footprint.
That's right. That's
and right. those footprints were found all over the place. So among the Bigfoot community, it's likely you're going to find people saying, well, they're all real, and Ray Wallace just copied that from the real-life footprint. But, you know, his footprint stompers that the family showed on the news, you know, they did look very suspiciously like a lot of the famous tracks that were found later in 1967
mm-hmm.
or in 63 there was some found. But... it's pretty well known that some of the tracks were hoaxed. It's just really hard to tell. The early investigators, John Green and Renee Hinden, they followed these tracks coming down off the mountain, walking along the dusty new cut road, and then going back down in the creek. You know, how did they hoax that? It would have been quite difficult wearing these wooden shoes. You know, but Ray Wallace, you know, gets connected with the Patterson film, and a lot of people say, wasn't there a deathbed confession, you know, and
right.
there wasn't, you know, Roger Patterson never confessed on his deathbed. He died an early death of cancer, and he insisted on his deathbed that his film was real. But
well, what I like about that is the fact that that film is so old. I mean, nowadays with Photoshop and video editing and everything, who knows what you could do. But in those days, they didn't have that. What you saw is what you got. And, you know, a lot of experts have looked at this, and they scratch their heads. They're pretty baffled about it.
Sure enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was on film. Much higher resolution quality, and, you know, you can blow it up and analyze it. You can see the actual thing and know that it wasn't manipulated. A guy named Bill Munns down out of the L.A. area has been studying the film. He has some 8 or 9 copies of it in the highest quality, and he's been doing frame-by-frame studies. So if it were spliced or edited in any way, he's a film professional, worked special effects and costuming in Hollywood for years, he would know. And so far, despite what a lot of these other researchers say, you know, the film wasn't spliced, it wasn't edited. There was no Bluff Creek massacre and so forth and so on. Either that's a a real creature or it's a very good suit, you know, and it's the real thing. Compared to today's capacity, everyone's always asking, you know, with all the digital cameras and the cell phones out there, why don't people ever get any video? But, I mean, what we get is these really blurry, ridiculous things on YouTube, and quite a number of them are just humans or stumps or shadows. But, you know, by the time you get your camera out and you push the buttons and get your little app running and the thing runs through its autofocus cycle, you know, that creature that you might have seen is going to be long gone.
Well, and I guess people have set up cameras that will turn on, turn off, you know, timer cameras and things like that that they've put out in the wild. I saw one where they had a deer run by, something like that. Maybe it's just a matter of time, Stephen.
Maybe, yeah. There, the theory out there now is that Bigfoot can sense these things. They can sense the electronic noise or the vibration coming out of them, that they somehow know. They can see in the infrared spectrum better than we can, perhaps. So those little sensor lights trigger them. And, you know, once again, we're talking about a creature that is supposedly very clever and knows everything in its environment. So it's very hard to fool them, supposedly, so they say.
Let's talk a little bit more about the Native Americans and some of the things they said, some of the things they found. What have you uncovered, Stephen?
Well, you know, Willow Creek is a very strange place out here, not just in the Native culture, but in the, you know, European, I guess you could call them, culture. There's stories of all sorts of strange things. And the giant salamanders, the river serpents, the mer creatures that live in the river, little people, you know, these are very common things in the Native culture. And they do still seem to believe in these things. A lot of them do. Up in here, you know, it's a really mixed bag what exactly Bigfoot is. Some of them will say Bigfoot is human, like you might have seen in the David Politis presentation. But, I mean, just as many say they're just another creature out there. And on top of that, you know, there's the people who believe they're shapeshifters or that they have some kind of spiritual ability. They're mystical creatures. They come from the spirit world, you know. So just like ordinary people, and Native Americans aren't all going to believe the same thing.
What is your take of the witnesses, the people who report seeing this? Campers, police officers, a dentist in the northeast, north at west. These are people who have nothing to gain, everything to lose, yet they keep saying that they see this thing.
Yeah. You can usually tell the witness who wants attention and fame when they start asking you to edit their book for them, you know. But
that's right.
The ordinary people, they'll come in my shop, and they may do so for months before they ever mention Bigfoot, you know. And they don't necessarily tell you their location or their name. They don't want to be published on my blog. I mean, it's an ongoing problem trying to get witnesses to come forward with any kind of concrete information. But, you know, they'll still tell you that. And they'll look you in the eye, and you can tell that they really do seem to have seen something, including a lot of my friends in the Bigfoot world. They've seen these, and quite often they didn't want to see it. You know, it's something that happened to them, and quite regularly it had a very traumatic effect. It disturbs a person's sense of reality. You know, what is that? You know, that thing is not even supposed to exist, and it's very hard to deny them. You know, these aren't outrageous stories, like, you know, it had fangs and blood dripping and hideous glowing eyes. I mean, usually it's something very prosaic, like they saw it in their backyard and it was eating blackberries, you know, and well, you ask them, what did it do next? It stood up it walked away on 2 feet into the forest. You know.
And most people report seeing the same thing. It's a big creature. It's hairy. It's got a cone-type head. A lot of similarities there, huh?
Yeah. The image, you know, the image is Bigfoot or Sasquatch or the wild man has been around since the earliest times. You know, we had it in Europe as well, ancient Babylonian times. I mean, they had different images of it. And so in the 1800s, you saw a lot of reports of this thing being like a wild human, oftentimes wearing clothes, carrying clubs. We have a report up here, came from a Yurok native woman, you know, from the last century, and she described the Oma, who, you know, lived in caves, and they would rob graves, and they would amass wealth, and they had medicine pouches around their necks, and they were basically human, you know. And then there's the other camp that sees them as a sort of an ape, the cone head and the furry, brown furry thing. That image has sort of solidified and grown, especially with our knowledge of gorillas, you know, and chimps. These people back in the early days may not even have had a real concrete idea of what an ape was.
Well, give me some percents of speculation on your part, if you would. One, what's the percent, do you think, of probability that whatever these people are seeing, they're seeing something? I'd say that's almost 100%. What about you?
Well, there are notorious problems with human perception. You know, we are capable of seeing things that don't exist, you know, or things that exist in some inner realm or maybe spiritual type things. But when someone tells you they stood right in front of it and looked it in the face, that's very hard to deny.
That's right.
You know, when you're driving your car at night, quite a large percentage of the sightings actually occur along roadsides. You know, I hear those all the time out here. It's very easy for your mind to see something in the shadows, you know. And it's really hard. You know, I'm much more skeptical of human reports and human belief systems than I am of the Bigfoot, you know. But I still think that a real solid witness who got a good look at the thing, that's the best evidence we have, and all the footprints in the world aren't going to compete with that.
No, not at all. Okay, so you would say that whatever they're seeing something generally, so that's a high percent, I take it, right?
Well, you know, there are grades. You know, BFRO has a class system, A, B, C,
yeah.
How to rate sightings. You know, quite often the Bigfoot researchers are taking almost everything as Bigfoot. You know, an acorn falls out of a tree and that's suddenly a rock being thrown by Bigfoot. You know, and on YouTube, and it's just gotten out of control with the what we call the blob squatch. You know, it's a blurry form, a shadowy form. You know, you can stare at something like the patterns of wood in your paneling on your walls or out at the ceiling, and you can see faces and shapes. And quite often, that's what I think people are seeing. And it's really, really hard to ascertain if. At what point we can say this was a real valid sighting. And it's one of the challenges of taking these reports. And, you know, when you talk to witnesses, you don't want to insult them. You don't want to ridicule them or say it's just all in your head. So you have to be very sensitive in how you handle it.
Well, that's true. Now tell me about your Facebook discussion group.
Okay. Well, there's a link for it up on my blog that you can go see. But it's facebook.com. Where did it go here? Facebook.com/groups/smartbigfoot, all one word, smart Bigfoot. And it's called the Coalition for Reason, Science, Satire, and Sanity in Bigfoot Research.
Why'd you set that up?
it sort of became a necessity with these blob squatches. And, you know, one of the other things that people keep reporting is these stick structures. You know, every tree or branch that falls in a pattern, they start saying that Sasquatch did this. And, you know, with the rise of Facebook, suddenly the Bigfoot community got absolutely interconnected. And all these people, it used to take years to kind of break into this scene and to meet these people. And it was really quite an honor. All of a sudden, you were exposed to hundreds of them. And they're coming out of the woodwork now even more with this Finding Bigfoot show. Everyone wants that experience, you know. Once you found your footprint, it might have been made by a bear. Or once you, once you find your stick structure, you know, it might have just been trees that fall down like they do in my backyard every day, little branches and things fall in patterns. But, you know, so we decided to form this group just to try to have some real rational, critical thinking, you know, where we're not afraid to say skepticism. You know, skepticism is like a dirty word in the Bigfoot world. Like, it almost means mocker or disbeliever.
I think it's healthy, you know, if you have an open mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as long as you just don't say no, no, no to everything without investigating, getting some facts and things like that.
Sure enough. You know, I've listened to the Coast to Coast from, I guess, 1989 or 1990.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, absolutely fascinating radio show, longtime listener. But, you know, I have to take a step back and say, well, not everything on this show could possibly all be true, you know.
Right.
And so I'm really fascinated by these things. The world is a weird place, and one of the best ways to find out how weird it is to study science. You know, the methods of science are showing us the world that we can't see with our eyes. You know, in primitive times, we saw with our eyes, you know, and we came up with meaningful descriptions of the world. But now we are actually aware that there are galaxies, and we know about things like quantum physics and so forth and so on. So, I think that to truly understand science and not take it in a sort of new age way, you know, like because quantum physics says this, then suddenly all the strange ideas in the world that you can come up with are also true. I mean, we want to be able to test these things and make them real. You know, this is how we get magnificent devices like smartphones.
Well, you know, it could be this creature, Stephen, could be a giant ape. It could be some kind of monkey. Who knows what it could be? You know, it could be pure animal as opposed to, when I was a kid again, I always used to think it was the missing link. You know, they talked about the link between ape and man. I always thought maybe Bigfoot might have been that little crossover. I find it difficult to accept the dimensional theory. How about you?
Well, you know, I mean, I like to say, you know, you could say humans are spiritual creatures, and, you know, you can meditate or whatever you do and go into another universe, as it were, but in your experience. But when you're trying to document something and understand it, it's best to look at real evidence, you know, and to try to put these things together logically in a way that can make sense and be useful, to have useful knowledge, instead of, you know, all these ideas of the monsters. Bigfoot is a monster. Well, you know, the gorilla was seen as a vicious monster too, until we had habituators get out there, and people like Diane Fossey actually lived among them and were able to document their real lifestyle. So this is what we all kind of hope we can achieve with Bigfoot. If it's really out there, we should. And, you know, there are people who claim to have Bigfoot coming in their backyard, and they claim things like Bigfoot is human and that Bigfoot speaks to them in their heads. You know, there's one fellow who has a teacher with a capital T, Bigfoot.
I love it. Stay with Stephen. Much more to talk with you about. Plus, we've got an hour of phone calls, and we will open up those lines right now on Coast to Coast AM.